Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk, Jeff Fiegel's with you. The phone number is 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. I promise you I will get to some of your tweets today. I've not done a good job of that.
You've been terrible
over
with
the
that.
Last couple of weeks, but I will do that. I promise you. So get your questions on Twitter. Apologies for the late start. The equipment we used to do the show, for a reason that you're probably not interested in, had to be used to stream the press conference. So it had to get moved into the studio and then get moved back and reset up before the show.
True technical
and
difficulty.
We did actually get everything finally set up, so now we're good to go. I think you might have saw a false start a little bit earlier. But everything's good now. So here we go, folks. Pat Shurmur's press conference, and Jeff, you listened to it. Both of us were in there watching it and listened to it, obviously.
Yeah.
And here's the thing that stuck out to me.
All right.
It was normal. Besides the lights going off in the first 2 minutes.
Yeah, that was horrible.
I will let the person who did that remain anonymous because I'm nice, even though I don't like to be. But it was normal. He gave logical football answers. He said, guys, I will answer whatever I can. Some things I want to keep private, I'll tell you that. I don't believe in, you know... All his answers were like the answers he should have given. There was nothing in there where you're like,
secret.
Boy, that was weird, or, you know, it was strange. That was a little odd the way he did that. Oh, he seems like a little bit of a different personality. He just seemed like a smart football guy giving logical football answers to things that made sense. And I think after a 3-13 year, which frankly, Jeff, was a bit chaotic, let's be honest, with all the stuff going on,
yeah,
I think the Pat Shurmur hire – is almost a return to normalcy that I think will do the team and the franchise some good.
I was very impressed. One thing I liked about the press conference, it was not scripted.
No.
It was not scripted whatsoever. There was no message that he needed to send out so people can go and write about it.
It just seemed like a guy talking from his heart about football.
Exactly. And he answered the questions in a way that you want him to answer questions going forward. There isn't going to be anything after the question is asked and answered. You know, you don't want there's no mystery behind it. It's basically he told us that, you know, I'm going to tell you what you need to know. Once in a while, you're going to get the standard. I can't talk about that as between me and the player,
which
is normal. Mm-hmm. But I liked his demeanor. I think he looked very confident. I think he has a plan. More importantly, he thanked the organization. He thanked his wife. He thanked his kids.
Well, you got to thank the wife. Otherwise, you're not going
there's
home.
There's no question. Yeah, first off, that's the number one thing. And for good reason. The football wives are there. They spend a lot of time on their own with their families. But I think that, you know, as far as him going through and really understanding he's picking his staff. It's kind of putting that together. But not a lot of things unanswered. When he talked a little bit about his relationship with Odell Beckham, how he's going to try to figure this young man out, how he works, how he thinks, address the offensive line.
Yeah, so, Jeff, I think there are some important things that we learned over the press conference. So let's hit those next. One, he talked about it. So James Betcher is going to be the defensive coordinator. He answered a question about it. We'll start there. Defensive coordinator from Arizona. They've had a top six defense for 3 years. He runs the 3-4. A very multiple front, as Pat Shurmur said in the press conference.
Yeah.
And obviously you're a nickel more than 50% anyway. So not sure what type of impact that base defense formation will have on the Giants. I think we'll get more answers to that as we probably get closer to OTAs.
Well, I think that's a big question. I think you're looking at the personnel on this defense coming from a 4-3 to a 3-4. It's a big, you know, it's not a huge difference like you mentioned, but, you know, there are certain players that you have to look at playing different positions in the scheme of things. But,
and here's how I would look at it real quick, Jeff. I think you get Snacks at nose tackle. You put Dalvin Tomlinson at one of the, 3-4 defensive end spots. Olivier Vernon will be a stand-up rusher outside, something he did do in Miami. I think whether JPP's a stand-up rusher or a hand-in-the-dirt D-end in the 3-4, I think is an interesting question. I think he could probably be a base 3-4 D-end, and then maybe on pass rushing downs, he could, you know, obviously rush the passer in the nickel. And then, you know, do you try to bring back a Devon Kennard, who would probably fit in as a 3-4 outside linebacker? But I do think you have to add some guys that can play on the inside, which is really important. Jeff.
It's okay. I mean, now you're adding another linebacker in the mix. And so, you know, and obviously the last year the linebacking position was very, you know, injured. And there's going to be – that is – something the team's going to have to address as far as who's going to play linebacker. Kennard is a good analogy as far as him can play down, can play up. But, you know, defensively, I like the way that James is going to change things up. And he comes to 3-4. He could go to 4-3. He just does things differently. And as Pat Shurmur alluded to, that he's seen it. Being an offensive coordinator, he understands the nuances of a defense that changes. It's like a chameleon. You know, they'll come to a game in a 3-4, and they'll, you know, the second half they come out in a 4-3, and, you know, there's things change around there. So those are some of the good things that, about the defensive side. It's interesting that he talked about putting and assembling his staff. We know that there are, have been some other positions that have been filled already. We don't know anything more about that, but soon enough it'll be done, and I think that they'll get together collectively and start evaluating the roster.
Issue two, as James McLaughlin used to say. Eli Manning is going to be the Giants quarterback in 2018.
Yep.
John Mara said after the press conference, which you did not hear, he was asked, would Eli be okay if the Giants drafted a quarterback number two? And he said that Eli expressed that to Dave Gettleman in their meeting. So
that he would be okay.
Yeah, he'd be fine with it.
Well, I don't think he has a choice.
Well, I mean, he could say, I want to get traded if he wanted to.
Well, not if, if you've been told that you're going to be the quarterback.
Well, and that's the thing. So the bottom line, folks, is that he's going to be the quarterback, and that's not going to impact what the Giants do with that second pick. And I think I go back to, you know, Dave Gettleman at the Senior Bowl. I was there for that. There was only a few reporters there, so we actually got to ask a few questions. And, you know, Dave Gettleman basically said, look, I'm not going to tell you if I'm picking a quarterback or not because, A, he still has to evaluate all these players, but he's not going to overdraft somebody in that position. And that's kind of what Jeff and I have been saying. A lot of you people out there on Twitter are yelling me, oh, you want to pick the quarterback, you want to pick the quarterback. And, guys, I don't want to pick a quarterback no matter what.
You got to love them to pick them.
If you believe a guy's the guy, you pick him.
No question.
Because if you get it wrong, which Dave Gettleman said out there in Indy, you're going to set yourself back 5 or 6 years. In fact, missing on one of those guys is almost more painful as it is helpful to hit on one of them. So you have to be very careful about it. Bottom line, though, Eli Manning is going to be back. How many years left? No one's been able to put their finger on it. Which
we know one.
We know one. And
we know
look,
one.
And
year.
Obviously, we
why
don't
look any further.
And nobody knows. You know, players get older. Peyton Manning was the modicum of health until he hurt his neck, and then all of a sudden he's missing full seasons. So who knows? But Eli Manning is going to be back. He will be the Giants quarterback in the immediate future.
I'll give you a couple things real quickly. I believe that this is kind of a shot of adrenaline in Eli's arm, knowing that Pat Shurmur is the type of quarterback whisperer that he is. Now, Eli Manning doesn't need a quarterback whisperer to come in here and help him develop him. He needs somebody to come in there and say, okay, you're 37 years old. We are going to design and run plays to your strength and to run plays to the tight end, who is pretty good, and to number 13, who's pretty good.
And 87, okay? Who's pretty good.
And exactly. So that's, I think, if you're Eli Manning, that's kind of a breath of fresh air. The other thing with the draft pick, John, and I feel like if the number two pick in the NFL draft is a position that you as an organization, in my opinion, have to feel so comfortable that you are going to draft a guy at the number two position that potentially could be a Hall of Fame football player. You very rarely get into this situation. 14 years ago, you were in it with Eli Manning. He's a future Hall of Famer. So that was a good pick. You want to make sure that that number two pick is going to be a Hall of Fame football player. Or if it doesn't turn out that way and you're not 100% sure that you really, really like this guy, you got to move on and take someone else.
Well,
you know
and my thought, Jeff, is that's why you either pick, to me at least, you either pick the quarterback there or you move down. That's, to me, what you have to do.
Okay, so let's just quickly discuss the number two pick as maybe a Saquon Barkley. Okay, can he be a Hall of Fame running back? The way he's been –
he could be.
The way he has been, you know, kind of analyzed in this mock draft stuff, this guy is the next coming. He's the highest running back aside from Adrian Peterson coming out of college ever.
That's what some people say. So others will disagree.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of people that say, hey, take the running back, and if you don't like the quarterbacks, then take that guy. Or you just start to gather draft picks and build your offensive line, you know?
And by the way, there are going to be some good interior offensive linemen.
Yeah, I was following you a little bit at the Senior Bowl. You were impressed with a lot of guys
at the start of round two.
And you know what? Some of the guys that you were talking about at that Senior Bowl are not guys from really big programs.
No.
And so those are the kind of guys that Dave Gettleman goes out and finds. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at the history that he has of going finding good quality offensive linemen, maybe in some mid-round picks and from schools that you don't really recognize. You know, you saw him there, and I was reading some of your tweets and some of your stuff. It sounds pretty good.
All right, issue three. Davis Webb. Dave Gettleman said, I know nothing, literally, I know nothing. So I guess with Cam Newton, he probably didn't do a big workup on Davis Webb in Carolina. So he is a blank slate. Pat Shurmur said he would not talk about what round he had Davis Webb graded as, but he said they had him graded out as a good kid.
Didn't you sense he almost said we had him as –
He's a good player.
That's funny you picked
that. I noticed that too. He almost gave up the shop, but he didn't.
We had him as a good player and, you know.
Correct. But –
but he also said there's no film on him. We don't know anything about him.
And Shurmur also said with all his players, it's a blank slate. So I think these guys are going to go in, get to know Davis Webb, and kind of see what he's all about. But I don't think his presence will be the reason the Giants do what they do at number two. Here's my point.
Well, he hasn't done enough to feel that presence.
And this is what Dave Gettleman said. You have to trust your board and you can't reach. When he said when he was in Carolina and Josh Norman left, when he lifted the franchise tag, he said everyone was killing him, that we have to draft a corner, we have to draft an offensive tackle. And he said, guys, we're not going to draft one for the sake of drafting one because that's when you make a mistake. If Dave Gettleman believes that one of the two quarterbacks are worthy of the second pick, he'll pick him. If he doesn't, he won't. It's that simple. Period. Stop. Conversation over.
Well, we have so much more time to go.
Absolutely. All right.
I'm saying like to the draft. Yes. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Topic four, Pat Shurmur confirmed, as much as Dave Gettleman kind of said the other day, that he will be calling the plays on offense. He did not give away the shop in terms of who the offensive coordinator is going to be. That seems to be something that's still ongoing behind the scenes. So we'll see who the offensive coordinator is. He did talk about his offensive style. And the way he answered that question, I think tells me why the Giants thought he was a good fit. He said, we're going to run the stuff that our players are good at running,
which
is the coach adjusting to the personnel that he has.
Forcing it down somebody's throat.
And I think that's what he did in Minnesota. Talking to Dave Gettleman, he basically said that the Vikings having a 50-50 run-pass split almost last year was a big reason he liked Pat Shurmur, because you have to run the ball and you have to have balance. So,
and one thing that the Giants fans will like, not to interrupt you,
go ahead, please.
That he had mentioned the fact that if you can develop your running game, how it'll set up your play action to put the ball down the field
again.
He said
meaningful play action.
Meaningful play action.
He said so play action has an impact.
And so for those who have been hoping that you get the deep ball again from Eli Manning, there you go. Okay?
You know me. I'm on the front line with that.
But again, you got to, and if you look at what Minnesota did last year and Case Keenum, the guy threw the ball down the field quite a bit, and that vertical passing game, which I think a little bit of it was from Norv Turner, that system was in there, and then he left, and of course Pat came in. But I think that's pretty exciting in my opinion. You got to have the two running backs. I think that, and whether Dark was going to come back, you got the McKinnon guy that's up there in Minnesota that's going to be a free agent. You know, maybe does he get a look here at the Giants? I'm just throwing names out just for the sake of talking about them. You always like to, as a coach, I know this, and if you look at the history, there are a lot of coaches. If they're in an organization and they like a certain player, a lot of times they'll try to bring him back because of a couple reasons. Number one, he's a good football player, and that's what Pat Shurmur is looking for. He told us that in the press conference today. Okay, he's looking for guys that want to come to work, that want to play football. And the answer was, if I asked a player – about football, he would say, I don't know what else I'd be doing if I wasn't playing football, coach. That's the kind of guy he wants
to have. He wants 90 guys that love to play football. That's what he said.
And listen, I cannot agree with him more that because of how long I played in the National Football League, I understand how guys come to work. Most offensive linemen are that way, John. They're here early. They leave late. They love the game. They're grinders. They're lifers, right? You got to get – if you can get 53 guys on the same page that way, there is no disconnect. I feel like last year, there's your disconnect. There was not 53 guys in that locker room that wanted to play football for 60 minutes on Sunday and put in the effort out Monday through Saturday. And that you can't have that. And I think that he's going to build a culture here. And it's all about relationships. And we hear it all the time in football. It's all about relationships. And it is. You got to trust in relationships. Just like any marriage, you got to trust each other.
Topic five, Odell Beckham Jr. He's basically said he's a really good wide receiver.
Why that's at five, I don't know. It should be at one.
That's because we did the first four
topics. I'm just kidding.
So he said on the field he's great. Obviously, he's a smart guy. You want to get the ball to him if you're a smart coach. If you don't, you don't know what you're doing, which is true. And he said, he kind of vaguely addressed the off-the-field stuff. He basically said, I got to talk to him, clean slate, we'll see what he's all about, and we'll go from there.
Yeah. I think that that's going to be I don't know how that's going to go. I'm a firm believer sometimes you can't change a zebra's stripes. And just because you're a new coach, will that change? I don't know. One thing I do know is that one of the new wide receivers coach, his name is Tyke. I think it's going to maybe. I don't know what it is. But he's got, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with that. To me, John, is very interesting because I don't know the dynamics with that with Odell Beckham. And, you know, is he going to change just because Pat Shurmur says he's got a chance to? I have no idea. But all I can tell you is this, that he's not no-nonsense guy, okay? Mm-hmm. And I feel like if he comes in here and can abide to the rules that Pat Shurmur is going to put down, and I'm not just talking about Odell Beckham here, I'm talking about all of the players, is the fact that if he can abide by the rules and understand how things are going to get done and how successful he can be in this offense. This is ridiculous. Pat Shurmur's offense for a wide receiver like Odell Beckham, who the coach knows that he needs to get the ball to, this could be a huge year for Odell if he can stay healthy.
Absolutely. Those are our big takeaways from the press conference. I don't think there was any other huge topics that were addressed that need to be talked about here. But feel free. You have any questions, anything you want to bring up, give us a call at 201-939-4513. Again, 201-939-4513. Get on the phones. Again, the show started a little bit late today, but we are ready to roll. And let's start out with James down in Richmond on line three. James, what's going on?
Not much. Just talking about the new coach and information about how come they got rid of Spags. Hello?
Yeah, I'm with you, James.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and other than that, I hope they get the running back for number two, Barkley. And, you know, with everything being new, I think we need to start fresh. Eli is still a great quarterback, and I'm a big Giants fan, originally from New York, lived in Richmond since 86. So, but I like what the Giants are doing. They got to go with, you know, new things and try to do what they got to do. But I think it's going to be a great season. And as I said, big fan, love what y'all do, John and Jeff.
Thank
and,
you.
Appreciate it.
Just take it from, I'll talk to y'all later, and y'all have a great new year.
Thank you, James.
Very
you
good.
As well. And look, none of these assistant coaches things are official. The one guy he did talk about at the press conference is Betcher, so we can touch on that here. Why they decide to move away from Steve Spagnuolo? I think you want change. And look, John Mara spoke about wholesale changes at the end of the year, and people lost their minds about the Gettleman hire. Oh, you're not changing anything. What are you doing? This is going to be the same old stuff. Well, what's happening now? Everything's changing, okay? And I think you want a new defensive coordinator in here. And as much as people love Steve Spagnuolo, the reality of the situation here, Jeff, is that his defense was good in 2016.
Yep.
In 2015, it was terrible. In
right.
2017, it was bad. And the last two or three stops he had after his first stint with the Giants, they had a lot of struggles on defense. Now, that's not all him, obviously. The talent was diminished because of injury this past year. And then 2 years ago, there just wasn't a lot of talent on that side of the ball at all. So, obviously, you can only play with the guys you play with. But I think, you know, more than it being a commentary on Steve Spagnuolo, who I know ownership has great respect for, and I think he's a really, really good coach, and I think he's a good coach as well, I think you just wanted to try to do something a little bit different to breathe some life into not just the offense, but both sides of the football.
Well, I think you have to have change there because I just think it was too toxic. I just think that things just, you know, and you don't want to go into a situation where you still in the back of your mind think, well, what happens if this does the same thing next year? We really didn't improve what we said we were going to do. So I think that was the issue there. No question in our minds that Steve Spagnuolo is a good coach. And we hope that he, you know, if he is back with, I don't know, maybe another position. I have no idea. But whatever it is, you know, the organization is very high on him as a person.
Yep.
And, you know, but listen, this is the nature of the beast. This coaching carousel of what happens. There's coaching trees as we talk about it all the time. I like a little bit about the hire with James Betcher because it's not a Pat Shurmur coaching tree here. You know what I mean? This is a hire outside of the box, if you will. You know, and so he comes from Arizona where their defense was very good the last 3 years. And I think he's going to get a lot out of these players. More importantly, it's a guy that he talked about that the players will respect, that he gets along with the guys. I know for a fact that he's a very smart guy, mm-hmm. a very intelligent man. Ironically, He was the GA at the University of North Carolina when my son was there his freshman year. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
And he and my son CJ told me, he said, Dad, the guy is wicked smart. I mean, just like he's just moved up the ranks, obviously. So I like that. That's a good thing.
By the way, Dan Salmon had a chance to catch up with your son's roommate at the Senior Bowl.
Oh, he did.
Kicker from Miami.
Oh, yeah. How did he do? Did you know? Did you watch? You didn't watch him.
Actually, the first day I did watch him, I think he went 7-for-8, actually, on field goals the first kick.
Awesome.
The last one he missed was from like 56. He got it long enough, but he hit it a little bit wide left. But nice kid.
Yeah, he's from Summit, New Jersey.
And he is, and he's Jeff's son's roommate out there.
He's a good guy, man. I'll tell you what, he's a
small kid, though.
Yeah,
he has a big leg, but he's strong.
He holds all the kicking records at Miami.
He looks like a lacrosse player.
He was a lacrosse
player. Okay, well, I guess that's why he looks like a lacrosse player then.
He was definitely a lacrosse player. Yep.
201-939-4513.
Michael Badgley is his name. So.
Matt in Rhode Island, he's up next on line four. How you doing, Matt?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Thanks for taking my call. Two quick 1 point, one question.
Yes, sir.
My question first, I might have missed it because I was working through the press conference too. Was he specifically asked about the 4-3 versus 3-4 switch with the defensive coordinator?
You know what? The way he answered that question is that the new defensive coordinator is very multiple in his fronts, and teams are in nickel more than often than not anyway, so he doesn't think that is that big of a deal anymore in the National Football League. He did not say either way, one way or the other, if they're going to be a 3-4 or a 4-3. But my impression and the way I would analyze what he said, I'd like to get Jeff's opinion as well, that I would not be surprised if we saw more of a 3-4 base front as opposed to a 4-3 base front.
I agree. He also mentioned that, you know, a lot of times there's five guys on the line, and it's just, you know, not a lot of things – it can go back and forth. It's just a matter of personnel. And really, when you look at the league today, you're right. These teams are a nickel constantly.
And nickel always has a four-man front for the folks that don't know that.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Because I kind of just missed that part. I thought he did a good job. But like Tom Coughlin kind of used to say, talk is cheap. It's easy to win a press conference.
Absolutely.
Question, and then I'm gonna hear your answer, then you can let me go. What are the odds he was told to make sure that he wore a suit that fit?
By
upper management.
Thank you, Matt. I would say those odds are probably pretty high.
Well, somebody.
I think Pat Hanlon was on suit patrol.
After the press conference.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate
today,
the call.
We were in the cafeteria. Have a good day, guys. We were in the cafeteria a little bit, and I got to meet him. And I don't know who the gentleman was next to him, and he said, "Well, Coach, at least your suit fit this time." Said that to him, right?
No, we didn't.
And his response was, "Well, my girls will not let me get up on stage and not wear something that's tailored and looks nice, so I don't ever have to worry about that." Because he's got three daughters and they have four kids, three daughters and a son.
And his son, by the way, is a quarterback at Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so he might be coming out next year,
awesome,
hoping to get drafted.
That would be great. The other thing he had said at the beginning, he said that, you know, I'm the head coach of a team that was 3-13 last year, and we have to own that. And that tells me a lot. That tells me that I got a lot of work to do, but I'm not going to shy away from it. I understand we're 3-13, and there's a lot of things that we have to do better as a football team and an organization. And, you know, I was told that he walked around the whole organization and introduced himself to everybody yesterday. So, I mean, just starting out on the right foot here, I think it's been a very, very good day for him and the organization, and everybody should be proud of the hire.
In fact, being in Mobile, I'm probably the one person in the organization that has not talked to him yet.
Yeah, you probably.
I did not have a chance to talk to him in Mobile.
You didn't get to see him there at all. Right?
I took some pictures of him, but I didn't talk to him.
That's about as close as you got.
Well, dude, it was in the middle of a practice. I wasn't going to go up and talk to the guy while he's scouting players. I'm going to be respectful of that. Yeah. And Hanlon might have thrown me off the bleachers if I tried.
By the way, did it look like he was into what he was doing there?
Of
or was
course.
It more talking to a lot of the – I mean, I hear from what I've been told, now you have been there, that it's basically a networking area for coaches.
A big job fair.
Yeah.
In fact, I saw a lot of the Giants coaches on the staff last year looking for work.
Oh, did you? Okay.
That were down there.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Correct.
And that's not out of the ordinary.
No,
just,
not
it's
at all.
It's just the way it is, and it's this time of the year when there's staffs being assembled. Well, there was six new head coaches this year, mm-hmm. six or seven, was it? Six or seven.
That's a good question. I don't know off the top
of
my head.
But, you know, that's a lot of staffs. I mean, you got about 15 coaches on each one of those staffs times six. That's, you know, almost 100 players.
Tell you what, this, though. I'll tell you this. The second day when we did have a chance to talk to Dave Gettleman out there, he was sitting in the end zone which is a weird place to sit when you watch practice. Do you know why he was sitting in the end zone?
Lineman.
Right in front of him in the lineman or in the end zone doing one-on-one drills.
Yep.
And he was three rows back right in front of their one-on-ones.
Watching those
and watching those yep. hog mollies go to work.
Hog mollies, you call them, yeah.
No, that's what he calls them.
They're
not
big
me.
Boys. They are big boys. They're getting bigger and bigger and stronger and faster.
And I told Tino this on the phone yesterday. I guarantee you by April, he will be pounding the table for Will Hernandez from UTEP.
Okay.
And there's a chance
put that on the board.
And there's a chance he might not be there when the Giants pick in the second round. He might sneak into the late first. Jeff, he's 6'3". He's 340 pounds. He was manhandling people in one-on-one drills, pancaking guys. Guys
were getting. He's 6'3". He's a guard.
He's a guard, yes. Yeah. He was frustrating defensive players so much they tried to, like, fight him after reps.
And what was
that's how much he was kicking their butts.
Tell everybody what UTEP's record was this year.
They did not win a football game. They were 0-12.
Yeah, and I don't think they.
Conference USA.
Yeah, that's tough.
They were bad. Will Hernandez, good.
Doesn't mean that there's bad players on bad teams. Once in a while, you get a guy that comes through there. I mean, that happens all the time.
Ultimate team sport, man.
But
one
listen,
player,
you know
especially
what?
In the line, doesn't
that
make that big
of a difference.
That is the
job of every one of the people in the organization that's in scouting is to try to find talent.
Mm-hmm.
And that sometimes, you know, you may say, looking on film, going, this team is 0-12, man. Why am I going to look at anybody? But you got to.
The other guy that I really like, too, and he's, I wouldn't call him a finesse guy, but he's not like your traditional mauler type, like huge dude. Isaiah Wynn, he was a starting left tackle for Georgia. So obviously he's a good player if you're starting left tackle for Georgia
sure.
all year this year. But in the pros, they expect him to move into guard. In terms of fundamentals and being proficient at guard during Senior Bowl practice, he was probably, in my opinion, the second best offensive lineman there. He was very, very clean
was
in everything
he did. Was
he
taking reps at tackle too?
No, he just, from what I could tell, he
really?
Just did left guard,
now that's
right guard.
That's interesting to me that when you get there, they tell you you are going to go at guard.
Now, maybe he did some on the third day. I wasn't there for Thursday practice.
But, well, most likely he probably didn't if the
well,
other days.
Here's the thing. I bet you NFL teams are like, well, we have tape of this guy playing tackle. He played tackle all year. We want to see him if he can play guard. So that's right. probably why they had him do the guard reps at the Senior Bowl because he had tackle reps during the year. And I think he will also be a day two probably second round, day one starter type of player at guard next year.
Give me a quick hit on the quarterbacks, Mayfield and Rosen.
Allen.
Yeah,
they looked exactly the way they looked on me on tape. Neither guy showed me anything I didn't expect to see.
Okay,
Mayfield was my height pretty much. He ended up. It's funny because I was next to him on the field before he measured, and I'm like, this dude ain't 6'1". Because with cleats on, he was a little bit taller than me.
But they don't measure in cleats.
A little bit. No. But I was wearing sneakers. I know the cleats usually are a little bit higher, even though it was a turf field, than what the sneakers will be. So he came in around 6'3", which is, I think, about what my height is. So he's probably about my height, which is really short for a quarterback.
Yeah.
But Jeff, he gets rid of the ball. He's got a compact delivery. He's accurate. And even though he's a smaller guy, he can make all the throws. He's got good zip on the ball.
He loves football.
And he's a competitor.
Yeah.
I thought he certainly helped himself. I haven't heard any scuttlebutt yet about what the Broncos coaches thought
about
working with him.
He's not going to play in the game, right?
You know what? Is that I was flying yesterday, and I was alone with my child last night when I got home, so I really didn't have a chance to read. And then we had the press conference this morning. I know that was kind of a rumor going around.
Yeah, I just was – what I had read, he said that his purpose of going to the Senior Bowl was to show people that he could pick up an offense in 3 days, okay? Show them what he's got, but he didn't mention or if he was or not wasn't going to play in the game. But it sounded to me like he was not going to play in the game.
I know that's what he kind of indicated. Well, as of 7 a.m. this morning, it remains unclear.
All right.
Though Senior Bowl spokesman Rob Lahocki told AL.com on Thursday that the Heisman Trophy-winning quarterback from Oklahoma is expected to play, Mayfield himself has remained non-committal on whether he will suit up on Saturday. Then you have Josh Allen, which...
Big dude, right?
Physically impressive. Yeah, I mean, he looks like a quarterback. He's broad, he's thick, he's 6'4", he's 235... I mean, he's almost 6'5", and then when he gets out there on the field, dude, some of his throws, you're just like, whoa, wow. He was throwing the ball so hard, receivers had trouble catching the passes. But at the same time, as many times as you went, whoo, man, that guy's an NFL quarterback, you were like, where the hell was that pass going? So he was a little bit erratic, and I think that goes back to his footwork, which is something he talked about a lot at the Senior Bowl. He's not very consistent with his feet, and as you know, for quarterbacks, that's everything in terms of being accurate. So I have more confidence in Baker Mayfield being a starter in the NFL than I do Josh Allen.
Immediately.
Period.
Period.
And I believe that Josh Allen could reach a level that Baker Mayfield can't. Mayfield higher floor, Allen higher ceiling. If I was selecting a quarterback and I had to choose between those two players, I would select Baker Mayfield.
Okay.
Just based on the field stuff. I'm throwing away the off the field stuff because I don't know about that with Mayfield, what the deal is. Simply based on the field, the ability to be a good quarterback in the NFL, I have a higher level of confidence that Baker Mayfield will be an NFL starter for a long time than I do Josh Allen, and I will take the lower ceiling if I get the higher floor.
Well, we'll see. I mean, obviously, at 6 foot, that's a tough chore.
You can do it. Look, Russell Wilson. But remember, there's a lot of times he has to scramble because he can't see out of the pocket. Drew Brees is a freak show. I mean, he just is. That's just he is.
Well, Drew Brees has learned to throw off his toes, and his release point is high. I mean, he's learned to do that.
And then you have a guy like Jeff Garcia, who's another guy who was able to succeed not being very tall.
In the West Coast offense.
Correct. So these are all things you have to take in consideration. I would not select either one of those players with the second pick in the draft.
And, of course, Barkley and Rosen were not there because
Or Darnold. These are all underclassmen, obviously. Yeah. A couple of the guys dropped out. Of other first-rounders, Marcus Davenport from – oh, boy. Really small school. I got the roster in front of me. I can tell you where he's from. Hold on. See? Marcus Davin from Texas San Antonio. I was going to say UTEP, but I knew it wasn't that. He's from Texas San Antonio, which is a very small school.
Yeah.
Looks the part of a defensive end, 6'5 and a half, 260.
Wow.
Really toolsy, long arms, all
like
the
JPP.
Stuff that people like. Didn't see a lot of pass rush moves out of him. I think he's very raw.
Yeah.
Much better standing up in rushing than he was with a hand in the dirt, which is not a surprise given that's what he did in college. He was a stand-up rusher. So he's a guy that could go high. The two wide receivers really jumped out at me. James Washington from Oklahoma State, about 5'11", 210, but he's not a great route runner.
How about my man Berrios?
Dude. He is a tiny little booger,
let me tell you. But he is athletic and can catch.
But he is a jitterbug.
Yeah.
He's quick side to side, and I saw him drop a pass, which I was disappointed in. But he does have very good hands.
He's
and
smart.
That dude is quick. And the other wide receiver I liked was Michael Gallup out of Colorado State, who caught a really nice one of those wow throws from Josh Allen on a go route. I think he's another wide receiver that impressed me. I liked Rashad Penny and Akram Wadley, the two running backs, one from San Diego State, one from Iowa. I thought they played pretty well. Shaquem Griffin's a great story, by the way, and a great kid. I hope he makes it somehow. He's the kid that had his hand amputated at the age of four from the birth defect. They put him on the line. They put him at linebacker. They put him at safety. So he does a little bit of everything. He's 6 foot. He's 223. So I think he's a run-to-the-ball linebacker type. That's where I think he's going to succeed. You just wonder how much he's going to be limited obviously because of that amputation and only having the one hand.
Well, I mean, it didn't limit him too much in college. I mean, he's a pretty good player.
Yeah, and by all three Central Florida kids, you can see why they were a good team this year. The other two kids impressed me, too. The tight end, Atkins, I believe is his last name. Atkins. He had a nice one-handed catch in the end zone for a touchdown, and then Traquan Smith, the wide receiver, made a couple plays, too.
Yeah, he's a player.
He is.
Yeah, I've seen him on tape a little bit. Not tape, meaning tapes of games. I don't watch as much film as John does, but the fact is there's a lot of talent there, a lot of guys. This is the all-star game you want to go to, the Senior Bowl.
Correct, and everyone goes home for the game, by the way. They all watch the game on TV. They're there for the practices. That's what the coaches and scouts kind of get the most out of, and those are really the guys that jumped out the most to me. You know, you're probably only going to have five of the guys that were at the Senior Bowl go in the first round, I'd say.
Yeah, because there's a lot of underclassmen.
You know, maybe a little bit more than that, maybe a little bit less than that. other than the two quarterbacks. But, again, it was fun to go out there, talk to the kids, and, you know, kind of get a feel for them, which is always good.
And, of course, Dottino told me that they put a chip in the football.
They did put a chip in the football.
And he said, Feig! So I heard a guy who he kicked the ball 69 feet in the air. I'm like, Dottino, that means nothing to me because I have no idea how high 69 feet is.
Correct.
If you told me he kicked it 5.2 seconds, then I'd have a reference, right? But then I got to thinking, the indoor facility here at the Giants, the ceiling is 80 feet. So 69 feet to me doesn't seem that great of a kick because we used to hit the ceiling all the time in there.
Jeff Eagle says, Dottino, your technology does not impress me.
No, and I'm not bagging on
Go back
dots
to your
here,
hole, Dottino.
But he's just trying to get an idea of kind of what exactly what I was like. I have no idea what 69 feet means, but I do. And I know in Texas Stadium, remember years ago at AT&T Stadium when the Jumbotron was so low that the punters were hitting it, that was 90 feet. And then they raised it another 10 feet because the kickers were – 90
is tough to reach. Let's go to Len in Columbia, Maryland. He's up next. Hi, Len.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
How you
doing?
How are you?
Welcome back, John.
Thank you.
Hey, Jeff, I got a quick question for you. On this, on the coaches and the scouts leaving on Thursday or Friday and not watching the game live, is there any value to hanging around and watching how these young men prepare on game day? I mean, just kind of eyeballing. How do they practice? How do they look?
Well, I'm just
concentrating on pregame, not even the game itself. Can you gain anything from that, Jeff?
No, I don't think you can because it's so different. You have a melting pot of all these different players. They all come from different programs, different pregame rituals, things like that. I think by the time you're there the whole week, you're watching them getting ready for practice. A lot of times, the way they get ready for practice, you get ready for a game.
And Len, Len, they will leave, I think. I can't guarantee it. I'm not positive. I'm sure two teams do leave a couple people behind to watch the game in person.
Right. Yeah. I was just curious as to how, you know, just to kind of get a feel. The main part of the week
is,
you know, all the scouts were there, and now it's, you know, maybe there's a little bit of a letdown and just see. You know, how interested they seem in playing the game. I do appreciate that, Jeff. Listen, the Sherman News Conference, good job. We just hope it works out.
Again, Len, winning the press conference is easy. You have to do a pretty bad job to lose a press conference. It's going to be all about results.
You can get an idea, though. And let me just point to one thing he said, and I'm going to tie it to Gettleman. You know, he's talking about winning the locker room and so forth, those sorts of things. His comments were somewhat along the same lines as Gettleman at the beginning. I remember Gettleman saying very early on, maybe the first news conference, I'm looking for guys who are professional football players, not guys who are playing professional football.
Right. I agree.
And I got the same feeling about Shermer with that, too. I just think that's – now, there may be – here's another feeling I got about this interview. There may be locker room issues. I mean, that occurs. I mean, we got some characters on this team. We're trying to coach them. We're trying to help them. I mean, we have the last two wide receivers coach, that includes the rumored new wide receivers coach, eyes to Odell. And Odell's family. I mean, you know, the Giants are trying to get a handle on this whole thing. And I don't think that's by coincidence. I think these two guys got their jobs because of the closeness to, Beckham. And he's just a great football player. He's got to be on this team. I mean, there's no question about it. But, they're trying. There may be locker room problems, but I don't think they're going to last very long with this guy.
I mean,
this guy's got a job to do, and I think he knows what it is.
And, Len, I think the other thing, too, that they mentioned, and Shermer said this is kind of when he realized that him and Gettleman were on the same page in terms of how you build a roster, and that you have to win up front on both sides of the ball if you're going to win, and both guys agree on that.
Yes. And, I've used this before. I know he talked about that rookie center, and this is not, I'm okay with Brett Jones, but I just want to talk about the center position. And I remember back when the Bengals started their team the first year, the first player Paul Brown drafted was a center. And somebody said to him, center, why not? I mean, why not a quarterback, running back, wide receiver, some stud defensive lineman? And he says, it all starts when the guy hikes the ball. You got it. And the guy played 11, 12 years. I don't know about Hall of Fame, but he went to a lot of Pro Bowls. And, you know, I'm agreeing with you. You know, it's the upfront part. And I think it's, you know, I think it's that middle part. I think it's center and the two guards. I mean, those are the critical, to me, anyway. I think you build up the middle. John, it's like baseball, strength up the middle.
And, Len, here's the thing about it, too. You can find in the draft, in those middle rounds, like they did with Pat Elflein down in Minnesota, who's their starting center,
you can find
plug-and-play players at guard in college a lot easier than you can find plug-and-play tackles.
Yeah, that's why they get paid so much.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. I think that's a good point. I just think, and I've thought like this for a long time. I just think it's the middle of the line back. It's that center to the quarterback to the running back. The three guys who are going to touch the ball the most during the game.
Yeah,
thank you, Len.
Hey, good luck to the coach. I think it's a good move. Looking forward to seeing who the assistant coaches are going to be and. You know, let's go Giants. Let's start turning this thing around.
All right, Len, take it easy, buddy. Good to hear from you.
We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
All right, let's go to Sean in California. He's up next.
Hey, what's up, John? What's up, Jeff?
What's up, Sean? Right, Sean? How are you?
Hey, I called in yesterday addressing, like, the first round on where I wanted to go with that. But I was going to ask today, if you can – I know you went to watch the practice for the Senior Bowl, John. And
yeah.
I just wanted for you to break down – some offensive linemen that we could see come off the board, maybe like in rounds two and three, and some of the offensive lines. I know there's that stud from New England. He played in the league for like 7 years. He should become a free agent if New England decides not to keep him. But is it too early if you can pick down some of the offensive lines that guys that we might see in a free agency? And if so, if by any chance that we Dave Gettleman decides to not go a quarterback in the first round and say, like, the Browns take Barkley. Is there any chance if we do trade, like, the number two pick for, like, the number eight pick or something? Because there is going to be some studs, stud offensive linemen around, like, pick six to pick ten. What could we get for that number two pick in return? And I'll take the answer off there. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Sean. Well, I'll tell you this.
You get another number one.
A person that... how can I phrase this? A person that works for another organization kind of said to me offhand, off the record, just joking around, like, I hope you guys don't draft Quentin Nelson. I don't want to face that guy. That's the guard from Notre Dame. A lot of people think he might be the best player in the draft at what they do, like the highest graded player at any position, but he's a guard, and you're not going to generally pick a guard at two.
No.
Now, if you trade down to seven or eight and you're sitting there and Quentin Nelson's sitting there, would you think about it? Absolutely. That's how good of a player he is. Connor Williams, a tackle out of Texas, another guy that if you trade down, you can think about. Those are the two guys that I think I would pick in the top 10 that are offensive linemen in this draft. As of right now, I haven't
done
all my
work. Were those
guys there? No, neither one was there. Both are underclassmen.
Yeah.
So those are the two guys that if you do trade down, you know, around 7 to 10 and you can pick an offensive lineman, again, this is very preliminary, but those are the two guys I would consider there. I mentioned some of the second and third round guys before. Isaiah Wynn, the guard from Georgia. Will Hernandez, the guard from UTEP. The two tackles that were there that are considered second-round picks, you have the kid from Oregon, Tyrell Crosby, who I know some people thought he didn't play quite as well as Brian O'Neill, the tackle from Pittsburgh. I thought Crosby was a little bit better than him. Some people thought otherwise. But those are two tackles there that people thought could be second-round picks. Brian O'Neill from Pittsburgh and Tyrell Crosby from Oregon. So those are two tackles that could be second or third round picks that are there. Then you have some of the really smaller school guys, Jeff, like Alex Kapp is a guy from Division II Humboldt State that people think maybe could sneak into the back of the third round. I think he's more of a day three guy myself. Skylar Phillips, a guard from Idaho State, he might be able to sneak in early day three. So there were some guys there that, as you move along, could impress. You were going to say something before that call, and I accidentally cut you off. Sorry about that.
Oh, well, I was going to say, when John Mara opened up the press conference,
mm-hmm.
he had mentioned that, you know, they have found a coach that the players will respect. That meant a lot to me.
And I think, and look, the big quote that was out there is that Dave Gettleman called him an adult. And he just seems like somebody that's very confident and in control in what he's doing. And he looks comfortable doing it. You know what I mean? Nothing seemed forced. He was just himself. And him being himself, I understand why you would walk out of the interview with him the way he presented himself today, saying, I trust this guy with my football franchise. I get it. I get it.
And I think that a lot of the players that are on this roster, the younger guys, they've seen him come through the playoffs this year. He's on TV talking about Case Keenum, talking about him, you know, possible head coach of the New York Giants at the time. And when you have that type of success and people are seeing it on TV and you're a player and now that team is going to hire them, that guy as your head coach, you know that you're sitting there, hey, I really like this guy. Look what he's doing for the Vikings. They won 14 games. You know what I'm saying? So you kind of get an idea in your mind that you already like the guy. He hasn't even been hired yet.
Jeff, I promised Twitter questions, and Twitter questions we shall have.
Yes.
This one specifically from you, at GiantRob84. He asked me this last week. I missed it, and he was specifically for you. He found that Brad Wing really struggled kicking to the left. And he wants to know if you agree with that, and if that's the case, why ask him to kick to the left? Why not just try to kick to the right when he has to? And could you tell ever in pregame that he struggled kicking in that direction specifically?
That's a great question, and it actually it goes against everything that normally happens with punters.
Because a right-handed, right-footed kicker should kick to the left a little bit easier, right?
No, if you're right-footed, you should kick to the right better. If you're left-footed, you should kick to the left better.
Okay.
Is that what you
just
said?
Brad Wing is obviously left-footed, so he should be able to kick to the right better, which then makes sense.
No, he should kick to the left better.
He should kick. So
it's the same side as your foot.
So it's easier to fade the ball than it is
to hook
the ball.
It's natural because the ball is here.
Okay.
And it is a little bit of a backwards, and that's why it's a good question. I haven't figured it out because he has a multiple of kicks. So some days he does that
his
awesome
boomerang
kick, the boomerang. He does the regular kick. So, and where I'm watching the game, and John can attest it, we're so high, you can't really see the rotation of the ball sometimes. So I don't know exactly, you know, what he's trying to do. But I said this before. There's no question in my mind about Brad Wing's ability and his leg strength and his it's just his confidence and his he's got to get it between the ears. He needs to work on his mental parts of the game. If he starts off a game with one bad kick, you can't let that affect you the whole rest of the game. And I think that's what happens with him.
Our buddy in Steve in D.C. is upset that Shermer wore a purple tie.
That wasn't purple. We saw it up front. It was
what did you think it
giant
was?
Giant blue, red and blue.
Oh, so it was almost like the embedded crisscross red and blue, which maybe came off purple.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. It looked like almost like a dark pink to me.
It was definitely giant red and blue.
Okay, that's good. Let's see if I got one more here real quick before we say goodbye.
As Papa would say, and Pat Shermer is wearing his red and blue tie down the middle of his shirt, just like he describes the uniforms that they're wearing that day. White socks with gray pants and white jerseys, New York emblem on the side of the helmet.
Just a couple comments I'll read real quick. Pat Shermer owned that presser. No nonsense. We'll hold players accountable. Attitude is just what this team needs.
Very good. I like it.
Here we go. Ed Miglaccio. Finally, the system won't be forced on the players. That is in response to me pointing out that he said, we will run an offense that our players can execute well, which I agree with.
Totally.
And that's flexibility, and that's what we talked about during this process, Jeff, is flexibility.
It just seems so easy to be able to do that, right? I mean, okay, here's your players. We're going to have to run an offense that caters to them. Doesn't it, John?
Easier said than done, I guess,
That's
right?
what I'm saying. It's very easier said than done. I also believe that just because you have players in the locker room that you think you can design a system around, you still have to have good players if your system's going to work.
And look, that's the thing. You can hire the best coach. If you don't have the great players to go with it, it really doesn't make much of a difference.
Like you said, it's not about plays. It's about the players.
It's about the Jimmys and Joes, not the X's and O's.
He said in the conference, it's not about the plays. It's about the players, and that is 100%.
Thanks for joining us.
Yep.
We'll be back next week.
Have a great weekend,
Big Blue
everybody.
Kickoff Live. Have a great weekend. The Giants have a new head coach, and hopefully sometime next week we'll know exactly who's on his coaching staff. Of course, for all that information, stay tuned to Giants.com on Twitter, Giants mobile app, all that stuff for information. And Big Blue Kickoff will have all the info for you on Monday at noon on Giants.com. We'll see you then, everyone.